Hi, guys. I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. And we have a very special guest with us this evening. And their official bio is my second favorite bio I think I've ever read, next to my own, which I'm a little biased about. So I'm going to read you this author's bio, and then I'll tell you who they are. Oh, wait. Their name is in the bio, so I'm going to have to tell you their name. Our guest tonight is R.L. King. And her bio says, R.L. King lives the kind of exotic jet-set life most authors only dream of, splitting her time between rescuing orphaned ocelots, tracking down the world's most baffling cheese-related paranormal mysteries, and playing high-stakes... I don't know what word that is. I don't know how to say it. It's a game you play with albino squirrels.
Pinochle?
Pinochle. That's the one.
I don't even remember it, honestly. I wrote that a while ago, and I kind of forgot the details.
It's so believable until you get to the albino squirrels, and then you come clean in the second paragraph and say, or, you know, she lives in San Jose with her inordinately patient spouse, four demanding cats, and a crested gecko, which, as far as she's concerned, is way better, except for the ocelots. That part would have been cool. I agree. R.L. King is also known as Rat, for some reason, which we'll get into, or Robin. And I am a big fan of her because I totally leech off of her name for my advertisements for my books. So thank you for helping me sell books, Robin. You're the best.
I'm glad to be of assistance. I have no idea what I'm doing, but happy to help.
You're doing it very well. You're just selling a lot of books. That's what you're doing, and that helps me because apparently I write similar books.
Cool.
Speaking of your books, would you like to tell us about your latest release?
Sure. My latest release is book 35 in my increasingly badly named trilogy. Originally it was going to be a trilogy, but yeah, that didn't work out so well. My series is called The Alistair Stone Chronicles. It's about a British mage who lives in the Bay Area. He teaches occult studies and fights magical baddies. Lately, more of the latter than the former. The latest book is called Conflict of Interest, and it is about... There's an organization in the series that's called Portus Justitiae, which means the gates of judgment or some such thing in Latin. Mm-hmm. And they're like kind of sort of fanatically religious, and they don't like mages. They think mages are an aberration against God or whatever. So they're kind of, most of the time they just try to get them to stop practicing magic. Occasionally they'll get a little nastier. There are also demons in this book. And so Stone is forced to team up with this organization that's basically been trying to kill him in the past, because both of them think that demons are worse than mages. So, you know, there's that. It came out on the 20th of February, and it's been selling pretty well. I've got 100 reviews already, which is
nice.
A lot more than usual for this soon. So I think this one kind of hit a chord with people, so I'm happy about that.
Nice. Yeah, I liked everything I just heard. We do write similar stuff, and I love it.
Yeah, I've got this. We've got this very tall to be read list, which I kind of gathered at Superstars. Things I bought and things I noted down and stuff. And your book is definitely in it, so I'm looking forward to reading your book.
Awesome, that would be amazing. I actually, it's funny you say that because I have yours loaded on my Kindle right now. So that's cool. All right, here's what I have to know, though. This is purely for selfish reasons because I am not at 35 books. How do you maintain continuity across that many books? You must have something special you do.
I have a few things I do. Sometimes I don't maintain continuity. Occasionally I'll realize I've messed up and said something that I didn't, you know, I contradict myself, but I try pretty hard not to do that. Kind of keep notes for myself about important parts of the universe and, you know, when something major changes and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have got this this super fan on my mailing, on my Facebook group, and she has made a wiki.
Oh, that's amazing.
For the series. And she's also been kind enough to make me a series Bible.
Wow.
Nice.
So that has been tremendously helpful. Like when I forget what color somebody's eyes or their aura or whatever, and forget if they're dead or.
Well, I was going to say it happens to traditionally published authors as well. I read the Green Rider series by Kristen Britton not too long ago. And so in her thing, she has like King's Messengers and they all have special abilities and like their horses have a special relationship. So I started like keeping track and just like a note thing with a tab, like, okay, this person came in on this book. This is their magic. This is their horse's name. This in this book, they died. And I started keeping track of that. And there was like a minor one that was never actually on screen. And she killed her in one book. And then the next book, she killed her again. It's like, she was already dead. What are you doing?
She got better.
She got better.
Yeah. It's like those little things just slip through the cracks sometimes.
I love how you just told that story and made yourself out to be a total geek on the podcast.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I was taking notes while I was reading this fantasy series because I wanted to know who rode what horse.
I don't care.
I'm actually kind of interested in the horse's special relationships. I mean, that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they bond with them when they become a messenger, and it's like their like special horse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So kind of like the Dragon Riders of Pern, where they bond with their dragons, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That sounds right. Yes, it's been a while since I read that, but yes,
it's been a while since I've read it too. But I liked those books when I was a kid.
They were very popular. All right, so I was taking notes. And I got it. So all I need to do is find a super fan who loves me and my work enough to make a wiki for me.
Yeah, she is wonderful. She actually she does this. She doesn't just do this for me. She does it for a couple other series too. She does it for Shane Silvers's Templeverse series.
Okay.
And Orlando Sanchez, I think she does one for him too.
Oh wow.
And yeah, she really loves to read and she loves to keep track of that kind of stuff. And she's been amazing. So
yeah, that's really cool.
I send her swag whenever I have anything. Cause you know, it's like, I feel guilty cause she doesn't want me to pay her, which is, you know, it's like, I want to, because she's doing a lot of work and, you know, I feel wrong about just letting her do all that work, but apparently she likes it. So I send her cool swag and stuff and still feel guilty, but.
No, that's grateful. Amazing. Yeah, that would be, because I like, so I'm on the let's see, what I've published 3 and I'm writing book 6 now, and like I'll hit little things where I'm like, did I introduce this in this series? I feel like I did. do I let these wizards just talk to each other through their heads over distance? Surely I did. And actually, even as I'm saying that right now, I can't actually remember which one I landed on, but I had to go look it up to know, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, I have the brain of a squirrel, so sometimes it's like I have, you know, trying to keep track of all that stuff is hard, but it's also, I'm very, you know, obsessed with my series, and so it's, you know, it's kind of, it's easier because it's so close to me, you know, that I know all the characters and I know what they do and, you know, what they can do and what they can't do and that kind of thing. So I've been thinking about actually doing something that Jim Butcher advocates, which is making character sheets for everybody and then just updating them when the things change. You know, like, oh yeah, this guy doesn't have an arm anymore. No, that's not a real story.
I was just going to ask kind of the same sort of thing, like if you do use anything right now, because I played around with like Scrivener's notes and then also started using Notion recently, and then you can find some really cool like author world building templates in there. So I've been trying to play around with them, but didn't know if you already had something you used and liked.
You know, it's funny. I try all, you know, whenever I hear about this nifty new tool, I try it and then I always go back to pen and paper. I don't know, maybe I'm just old school, but I like to keep things in hard copy. And whenever I try to keep notes online, I lose them. Or like when I go between computers, they, you know, it's like I start at one place and then shiny, here's something different. I'll go try this. And so like I have, you know, things spread out over like 9 different products, and I don't know, it just doesn't work. So I just use pen and paper.
Do you write by hand as well?
Oh God, no. No. I learned to type in high school, which was back in the Cretaceous age, you know. But you know, they made us learn on manual typewriters, believe it or not.
Oh wow!
And I actually am really grateful for that, because I have never had even an inkling of anything like carpal tunnel, and I think it's from learning to type on. You know, basically, you had to manhandle this typewriter and really pound on it to get it to work. And now it's like the keyboards are easy. So.
All right. So the other question I had about 35 books in. Mm-hmm. So at this point, whenever you go to write one, is it just like down to a science for you? Like it all just clicks together, or are you having to do like outlining, or do you just pants it? How do you approach when you're this deep into a series?
I'm kind of, I don't write just detailed outlines. I've tried before mm-hmm. and it just doesn't work for me. My outlines are generally, you know, a few lines about, you know, this happens and then this happens and then this is. And I never go very far, because I'm a believer in the theory of writing into the dark, which I think is a Dean Wesley Smith thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like driving at night with your headlights on. You can only see part of it. But as you keep going, more becomes revealed. And mm-hmm. I like to write like that. I generally know where they're going to end, but I don't always know how they're going to get there. So usually what I do is I'll go back through some of the older books and look for little things that I left, you know, little threads that I left myself that might not even have been on purpose at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, just things like, oh yeah, we never really resolved this, so maybe we should do that. And then another thing I've started doing is using the Mthulhu cards,
which
I love those things. I mean, normally I don't like, you know, writer aids, you know, where they, mm-hmm. you know, like tell you, you know, oh, you know, have a car crash happen, or, you know, whatever, things that are really concrete like that. But the Mthulhu cards are so abstract that you can do anything with them. I mean, generally, I don't follow the rules or anything that they use in the little booklet that comes with it. I just generally pick out one of each type, mm-hmm. and then I write them down, and I start thinking about, you know, how those could affect, you know, the basic kind of 30,000 foot premise that I have for the story, and it's been remarkably helpful. So I usually do that before I start a new book now.
Yeah, those are really cool. Our friend Julie Jones bought a deck, so she's let us check them out. Very neat.
Yep.
Well, I guess we actually talked to them. I need to go back through my business cards from Superstars, because I met the creator, founder.
Yeah, I did too.
Who was there. I think we even talked to her about possibly coming on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I might have been a little intoxicated at that point. Jage, can you confirm?
I was not, and yes, she did sound interested in coming on.
Very cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually I considered very strongly bidding on the custom set of, mm-hmm. of Mthulhu cards that she was offering at the auction.
Yeah, I did too. And it was like, that's way too much money for me to be spending, but it was so cool.
I thought the same thing, but oh man, that would have been cool to have 50 custom cards.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I thought the David Weber thing went for less than it should have. I didn't bid on it, cause I thought it was going to go for way more. And when it sold for $1,100, I was like, oh man, I kind of wish I would have bid on that. Cause it was that he was going to read your stuff basically in perpetuity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very
That's
cool.
Pretty sweet deal.
Right.
Yeah. I think Jason ended up with that, right?
I think so. Yes. Yeah.
That's cool. That was the thing I was most excited about. And I really kind of regret not sticking my hand up. I mean, it's a lot of money, a lot more money than I wanted to spend after spending all the money I spent to be there. But I was still like, that would be really cool, you know?
Yeah, I wanted to bid on Kevin Anderson's Rush package, but that quickly went way out of my price range, which it's very cool that they raised that much money for the auction. So
yeah,
it was a wild auction. It was crazy how high some of the things went. It was very clear to me how many people in the audience were richer than me.
Well, I imagine since it's all considered a donation, they can probably write it off too, which probably
that is
helped.
True. It is for a good cause, though.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they use, for anybody listening, Superstars does a charity auction every year, but all the proceeds go to make scholarships to get people to Superstars who can't afford to get to Superstars. So it's really cool.
Yep.
Very cool.
Speaking of which, tell us about the publishing master's program that you're a part of.
Oh, yeah. I actually learned about it at Superstars last year. Kevin Anderson runs the program. And it's a year-long program with a week residency at both ends. And they teach you really, really in a really hands-on way about publishing from both the indie and the traditional perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing the degree, there's two projects that you have to do. One is you locate a public domain book, and you take it under your wing and kind of edit it and design a new cover for it and do basically shepherd it through the whole publishing process. And then Kevin's company, Wordfire Press, publishes them as Wordfire Classics. So that's pretty neat. And then the other project is that we do an anthology where we solicit submissions and on a particular theme. And we go through and read all the slush and go through and pick out the stories that we're going to print. And then we, we do the cover. One of the professors actually does the cover, but we the students have their input into it. And then, we do, once again, everything that has to do with publishing it. And then at the second residency, which is going to be in July, that's when they have the book launch for all of our single projects and the anthology. So it's pretty cool. It's been a lot of fun working on it and very, very informative.
Yeah, that is really cool. And so you're right in the middle of it right now then.
Yeah, we're in the process of finalizing our individual projects. Mine is Little Fuzzy by H. Beam Piper. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have not. I'm going to Google that right now, though, because it sounds amazing.
It's funny. It was written in 1962, which you would not think that would be in the public domain. There's a whole story behind that where he died in 1964, and that was right during there was a very narrow period of like a couple years when you had to actually renew the copyright or else it went into public domain, and his family didn't do it. So that book went into public domain. It's a really neat little story. It's like a alien first contact thing. They're out on this planet out in east, nowhere. And the main character is a prospector, and he meets this little creature he ends up calling it a fuzzy. It basically looks a little bit like an Ewok, only cuter. Kind of like a cross between an Ewok and a cat. But the whole story hinges on whether these little things are sapient, because if they are, the giant corporation that runs the entire planet loses their charter and all the money that they get from mining, resources on this planet. So it's really a neat story. I discovered it when I was a kid and I've always liked it. So I was really excited to do that.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I pulled up the Wikipedia page for it. That's really neat. I'll have to, I'm going to wait though. I'll wait till your version of it comes out.
Okay.
And then I'll get it.
Cool. I think you'll like it. It's a lot of fun. I'm amazed they haven't made a movie out of it yet, because those little fuzzies would sell like hotcakes. I'm not kidding.
Come on, Hasbro. I don't know if Hasbro's still around, but.
I think they are. Oh, yeah.
All right. So, one more for you, and then we'll switch to do the news. What would be your advice for the budding author? And it can be craft or business, or you can do both if you want.
It's a lot harder to get started now than it was when I got started in 2015, which was actually later than the kind of the big gold rush in like 2012, 2013. Mm-hmm. There's so many books out there now that it's so hard to get noticed. So I would say, make sure your book has a good cover. Make sure it's well edited. You're going to have to learn about marketing. I know you'll hate it. Everybody hates it, but you have to do it, because otherwise nobody will know your book exists. And tell a good story. That's the bottom line. I mean, well, when it all comes down to it, that's what people want is a good story. And they'll forgive a lot if the story's good.
All right, perfect. And on the marketing side, just follow my example and target Robin's readers. It was one of the when we were, it was funny, we were at Superstars and I just walked up, and of course it had been a couple years since we'd seen Robin. I was like, hello Robin, how are you? I have to thank you. And then I basically said the same thing, and we were talking about the platform I was using, and she was like, I don't think I have much of a following on there, do I? And I was like, oh boy, do you. And I pulled it up on my laptop and it was like, was it like 27,000 readers or something like that?
Surprised the heck out of me, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, your eyes went big and you had a big old smile on your face. I was like, yeah.
That was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, I was joking, guys. Don't target Robin. Leave that to me. Also, you should only target people that you write comparable books to. So, you know. Right. And I do in this case. So Robin's my target homie.
Yeah, I do not. So it would do me no good.
All right. To the news. All right. For our first news story tonight, Robin, we need to know how you got the nickname Rat.
Ah, yes. Well, that goes back to when I was in college. I joined this organization called SAGA, which was the Simulation and Adventure Gamers Association. It was basically the D&D
nerd. Nice.
Because I was a shy kid and I wanted to learn how, I wanted to meet people, and I thought gamers would be fun. So our school that I went to, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, had this thing called Poly Royal, which was basically kind of a big festival that they would put on for the parents and the community. Okay. And whatnot. And all the organizations had booths, and our particular booth sold British Banger sausages on buns. And because rat on a stick is a thing in gaming, it's like what the adventurers eat when they're too poor to eat anything else. We called our booth Rat on a Stick. And, except our slogan was, there ain't no rat and there ain't no stick. So I don't know. We were weird. But anyway, so I was the president of the club one year when we were doing that. And so I got myself a shirt that said Ratmonger on the back because I was the Ratmonger. And that sort of became my nickname, but that was too long. You know, nobody ever wants to go through three whole syllables. So they ended up calling me Rat. And I liked it because, I don't know, it was cute. So that was, you know, all my friends from college still call me Rat.
That's amazing.
And that's the story.
I love it.
You know, what's funny is I have I played trivia online for a long time, and there's actually another player that I've never met in person. I don't know her real name. She goes by Mouse. So now I know a rat and a mouse.
And a mouse.
Do you know, it reminds me of two funny stories, maybe three, that I've never actually told on the podcast before. And the one was when I was a freshman in high school, the way they voted for class president was like, they just had us all in a big open area and they were like, just, you know, nominate names. And one of my friends thought it would be funny to nominate me. And so I got nominated, and then they pulled everyone who was nominated aside and they were like, okay, you have 5 minutes to come up with your campaign to go out and convince everyone that, you know, they should vote for you. And I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? And like everybody else was like, oh, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, and like, they had all these like good things. And I was like, I got nothing. And I was like, what do politicians do? I was like, they lie. Politicians always lie. So when they said, all right, now is your time, walk around and try to convince people that they should vote for you. So I just walked around to everybody and I was like, if you vote for me, I'll make sure you get ice cream. If you vote for me, I'll make sure you get ice cream. And somehow I won that damn thing. and I became the president, and I didn't get anybody any ice cream. But the funny thing that came out of it was they did a so for prom, they did this, or no, I'm not prom, for the homecoming game for football, they did this thing where they did a mock homecoming queen and king, a king and queen, where you did like a gender swap or whatever. And so it just so happened that like the class presidents and whatever the next rank down, all of them were paired off as either it was male and female, right, for each grade. And so the way that you would win is people would like donate money. And somehow I won that as a freshman over the seniors. Like the senior, like the class president for the seniors was like the most popular guy in our school, you know, the big football quarterback and everything. But somehow dumb little me won. And so I had to go to, I became homecoming queen is what I'm saying. I was once the homecoming queen when I was a freshman in high school.
That's awesome.
And then I moved schools, not because of that, but I just moved schools. And my senior year, I had a very good relationship with one of my science teachers, and she was responsible for setting up the science club, right? And I was like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't got time for this nonsense. But I was there as she was, you know, basically doing the same thing. Give me nominations. And several people nominated me. And she was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then everyone voted for me. So I won. And then she told me, she said, your mission is to get people to join the science club. The school's had like really poor science club membership for years. And so your first job as president is to get us more members. And I was like, all right, I know how to do this. So I lied again. I walked around the school, and anyone that I knew pretty well was like, hey, guess what? You're a member of the science club now. And I just wrote down their name. Anyone I didn't know very well, I promised them ice cream, and then I got them. And so I walked back in with this roster of like 300 people or something, which historically they had like 10. So that was all fun and games. And then we did a canned food drive, right? So, you know, like the whole deal in school where it's like you do set up a canned food drive and every teacher will give you bonus points for bringing cans in, right? So, all right, cool. So we did that. And one day during school, it was like, hey, somebody needs to go around and pick up the cans. And I was like, all right. So me and a bunch of guys, you know, went and got some carts and started collecting all the cans. Well, a couple of the guys thought it would be a great idea to collect cans onto the cart and then go turn them into their own teachers so that they could get bonus points. I was like, whatever, you know, you guys do you. I don't need to do that. But the person I was pulling carts with, there was a teacher who was like very young. She was like in her early 20s and she was kind of gullible. And he was like, wouldn't it be funny if we went into her and took in like 100 cans? Because she was so gullible, she didn't even put a cap on it. Like most teachers would be like, you can only bring in 2 cans or something, right? 5 cans, whatever. This teacher didn't put a cap. And so he was like, it'd be funny if we just went in there with like 100 cans each and said we brought these in just to mess with her. And I was like, yeah, all right, that sounds fun. Well, she was so gullible that she believed us. And her whole class was laughing at her. In fact, real life Axel was sitting in the classroom and I would never forget it. He like face palmed himself and he was just like, oh my God, Miss Blank, you are so dumb. Which then she sent him to the office for, cause she still didn't understand why. And so we're like, oh shoot, what do we do? Cause this was meant to be a joke. And now if she realizes that we were just messing with her, she's going to be super upset and feel really dumb. And so it was like we kind of looked at each other and I think we both came to the conclusion is like, I think we have to ride this lie out now because otherwise it's going to be super awkward. So then as we're walking out of the room, a couple of the other guys also thought this would be funny and they wheeled the entire cart in. And this poor teacher, she just turned and stared at this cart with like 1,000 cans on it. And she looked so crestfallen that she had to count them. Well, at some point during her counting, she realized that she'd been scammed. Somehow, I took most or all of the blame for it. I actually still have the write-up slip somewhere where I was running a canned food drive scam. And I got sent to the principal's office. I got like suspension and stuff. But the principal was like, your science teacher begged me not to give you any discipline because she said she was going to handle it herself. And I was like, great. And he's like, I'm giving you some amount of suspension, in-school suspension, to satisfy the teacher you scammed. But your science teacher, she has something planned for you. And so I went into her class, and the punishment wasn't that bad. She made me like copy out of a notebook, and the other guys who were involved, we all had to copy out of a notebook all class. But she told me, like, this won't be the end of it. I'm not done punishing you for this. I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. Months go by. We come up to the end of the year. This is a true story, I swear. We come up to the end of the year, and one of the projects the science club had ran was something to do with like helping our local streams, like our local rivers. And I didn't pay attention. I was the president. Presidents don't have to like get in the nitty gritty, right? I don't know what's going on. And so I'm sitting in school one day, and they call my name over the intercom and one of the other guys who's part of my science club and tell us to go to that teacher's room. We go, okay, this is interesting. So we get there, and she's in the middle of teaching a class, and she looks at us and goes, what are you guys doing? You're supposed to be at the meeting. And we're like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And she's like, you got to go down to the river. You got to go down to Elk River. You guys were supposed to be there this morning for this special event that was happening. We're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, I think it was called Stream Team or something. She goes, you guys are supposed to be at a Stream Team meeting. There's people down there. They're supposed to give us a donation. I'm like, I don't know what this is. And she's like, well, you got to go down and deal with this right now. You're super late. I'm like, okay. So look at the other guy. And I'm like, well, you ran the Stream Team, right? And he was like, oh, sort of. I kind of did. I don't, meh. And she's like, here, I'm going to give you this folder. This folder has everything you need in it. They're not going to ask you to speak or anything, but if they ask you any questions, you'll have the folder. They're just going to hand you a check and then you just go. It's just a few people down there. And I was like, all right. So we hopped in his car and drove down to the river to meet these few people. And by few people, she meant a few hundred. Because half the government showed up, like the mayor of our town was there. There was people from like wildlife preservation. There were scientists from like different universities. The National Guard was there. It was like a whole giant thing, right? We pull up and kind of awkwardly walk up, and we're the only kids there, right? And this guy comes up and he's like, are you guys the kids from the local high school? We're like, yeah. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're late. You guys were supposed to give your speech already. And we're like, speech? What speech? So we get up in front of all these people and we're like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, the notebook. She gave us the folder with the info. And I open this folder and there's one sheet inside of it. And it says, ha, 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 ha. No one in my life has ever been so reluctant to hand me a check before. And when I got back to the school, we were so mad. Like, we're gonna go give her a piece of our mind. And we walk in and she is just dying laughing. Dying laughing. And she's like, I told you I wasn't done with you for the canned food drive. True story. She used the donation money to take us on a field trip, though, so I think it all worked out in the end. All right, real news?
Real news. All right, so it looks like for Worldcon 2026, Los Angeles was the only bidder, so that's now confirmed that is where Worldcon will be that year.
Yeah, I guess they officially confirm it in Glasgow this year, but
right.
Sounds like it's a done deal.
Yeah, if there are no other bidders at this point, it's probably not going to happen.
I mean, come on, Los Angeles, all the places you guys could pick. I mean, I'm not going to, probably wasn't going to go anyway, but still. You have Scotland, and I don't know, where's next year?
Is it Seattle?
Maybe.
I feel like Seattle's coming up soon for one of them.
Yeah, I think it is Seattle.
That is correct. There, yes, there it was. Seattle. Yep. Seattle indeed. All right, well, that's cool, I guess. All right, for our next one, it turns out that blocking pirate ships reduces pirates. Neato. According to an article from Torrent Freak, a new study has shown that blocking pirate sites in Brazil and India has led to an uptick in legal consumption of otherwise pirated goods. It's almost like people are not only cheap, but a little bit lazy. And if you take away the lazy cheap option, then they'll just go with the lazy option, I guess, and buy the stuff legally.
Good to know.
I mean, it's good to know that efforts to stop pirates are not in vain, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So this was, a lot of episodes ago, we looked at one of the big pirate sites while we were recording, and they actually had, like, my whole series up. I was like, come on. I'm already not making any money. Now I'm making even less.
All right, on to me next.
Yeah, and I know you're excited about this one. That's why I gave it to you.
Yeah, I was double checking because the note said anime inspired, but it also mentioned manga. So for those who don't know the difference, the anime is like the visual, either TV or TV show version, and manga is the book version for Japanese style animation. So there's a slight difference, but basically what this one is that the McDonald's logo tends to appear in different like anime shows or movies with the, like the M flipped upside down. So it looks more like a W. So what McDonald's is doing is kind of leaning into that and releasing an anime inspired menu. So apparently that's going to be in 30 global markets starting on, says Monday. That would have been this past Monday, right?
Yeah. It's already started.
Yeah. That's right now.
I don't know if the US was one of them.
I'm skimming real quick. I don't see any mention of it.
It's pretty neat,
though. Like they're going to have an immersive dining experience. That's in March, and that'll be in Los Angeles. So if you want to be part of that and you're in that area, you can join that.
An immersive dining experience.
Mm-hmm. Says that it will include tabletop projections of four episodic anime shorts McDonald's created in partnership with Studio Pierrot. Yeah. Interesting.
Now you might be wondering, what does this have to do with the book industry as it pertains to authors and why I included it in the show notes? The answer is nothing. I just thought it was a fun story.
Well, that's why I was double checking, because if they were going to release like a manga or something, then yes, that would be book related. I don't know what form this menu will take, but
I just wondered, why are they doing this? Is it to circumvent copyright laws or trademarks?
No,
or?
I think they're actually being cool, because I think the reason why people put, like, they want to show like a generic, or they're adding in like a fast food restaurant instead of just making it generic. They want it to look like McDonald's. So they were putting an upside down W so that McDonald's wouldn't sue them, I'm guessing, okay, is what would happen. Right. And McDonald's is basically going, no, this is cool. We can be McDonald's. And they're even doing a 10-piece Wick Nuggets.
Yeah, it actually has a quote here. It says, anime is a huge part of today's culture, and we love that our fans have been inviting us into the conversation for years. That's the USA Chief Marketing and Customer Experience Officer.
It's pretty cool.
So, yeah, they just, I guess, think it's cool and are leaning into it.
I don't know, like, that this will generate as much revenue as, like, a standard marketing campaign that a big corporation would do like this. But I think what it will do, and they're probably smart enough to realize this, is have a lasting impact for people who are like anime fans and have seen like the upside down W a lot, and they see that McDonald's is leaning into it, and they're gonna be like, huh, that's a cool company.
Yeah.
You know, buy more burgers.
Right. Chicken nuggets.
Wick nuggets.
Wick nuggets.
Chicken Wick nuggets.
I like the little image they have. They have like a Gundam. They have like a McDonald's Gundam in the background. It's amazing. Oh, that's great. All right. And for our final news story, founded in 1944, there was a comics company called EC Comics. And apparently they were very popular for a short time, but inevitably died in 1956. So now, 70 years later, Oni Press is bringing EC Comics back to life, and they're going to start releasing two titles a month, which I always think things like that are kind of cool.
Cool. Horror comics.
We used to run around with a lot of the pulp people. I don't know that I'd ever heard of EC Comics, but I bet a lot of the pulp people we know probably were fans, right?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, so they'll probably be pretty excited. All right. In our continued coverage of our robot overlords, No AI stories this week. Sorry to set that up. And now, because of realizing that we didn't have an AI story, I'm kind of glad I rambled and told my high school scammer story. All right, and that's your news.
All right, for our tools this time, Robin's going to tell us about Plotter and BookBrush.
Okay. I like Plotter. I actually don't use Plotter the way that you're supposed to use it, which is apparently to help you keep track of the plots of your books.
I like how this is starting.
Well, once again, it's yes. Like me and my pen and paper thing. You know, it just doesn't work for me, but I know a lot of people love using it for that. What I used it for, and the reason I haven't used it lately, is because I used it for my series Bible, and now I don't need to because I've got someone who made a much better one for me. But I found it very useful because it let me put in like characters and events and, you know, miscellaneous notes about things and places and all kinds of stuff that I could keep track of and, you know, link them to. I'm not sure you can link them to each other, but that's okay. But you can keep track of like which books they're in. Like if you have a particular character, you can keep track of they were in this book and this book, but not this one, which is tremendously helpful, especially for minor characters. The nice thing I like about it is that it syncs across all kinds of different platforms, so I can have it running on all my places where I might write, and then if I want to update it with something, I can just update it, and it'll seamlessly update the whole thing. I know they've come out with some new features lately, but I honestly don't know what they are because, like I said, I haven't been using it lately. But I definitely recommend it if you want something to help you keep track of your series and characters and locations and events and all that kind of stuff, because it's really easy to use and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just pulling it up just now. I know I've heard of it. We might have even talked about it on the podcast once before. I don't remember.
Yes, we did with David J. Peterson.
Okay, and he uses it. Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, that might be worth checking out. Might be a way to help me keep track of all my craziness. Who's lost their arms and all that, right?
Right. Who's already died?
Yes. So don't kill him again.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I mean, I write very much the way you described, right? So I've gotten a little bit more thorough just to try to keep my word counts from getting out of control. So, but I basically do the same thing. Like if I have an outline, it's basically like, it starts with like a collection of scenes I scribble down, usually on regular paper, and then I'll kind of put them into an Excel document and kind of move them around and then, you know, make kind of gaps between them and go, okay, well, how am I going to have to logically jump from this to this? And it's basically like almost like a sentence per chapter of just what I want to have happen. And then I just go write it, you know, and then, you know, just kind of a loose end. Like you said, I don't write out like probably the last half of it. I don't really do till I start creeping up on it. And then I kind of go, okay, I'm going to need to do this, this, and this to get to the next thing. And then, all right, now I'm at the climax. And that gets its own sort of sit down and think it through, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that almost always when I'm writing a book, I have no idea what, like, the last third of it is going to be, except for the very end. Because things will suggest themselves from, you know, characters' conversations or events that'll happen. And it's like, wow, I never thought that would, you know, I never thought of that, but that's cool. And usually I just have to let it percolate for a while. Like it'll, you know, I'll write it and then I'll go away from it for a day or two and just let it kind of bubble in the back of my head. And then all of a sudden it'll pop into like, yeah, that's cool. Let's do that.
Right. Yeah. All right. So what was the other one? Is BookBrush? And I believe you do something really cool with this one.
Yeah, I've just started using it, actually. I took a tutorial, and the way I tend to use online tools is probably not the best way, but it's just, you know, I've been doing it all my life, which is just dive in and mess around with it. And, you know, I used to be a tech writer, so, you know, RTFM is a thing, but I don't RTFM. I just kind of jump in and try to figure it out on my own. And for whatever reason, I could not, they have this great module where you could, that you can use to create like TikTok videos or book trailers or whatever. And I thought, oh wow, that's cool. I want to make book trailers, so I'll get this software and you know make book trailers. And for the longest time, I could not figure out how to get the video into the book trailer, because they had all these canned videos that you could put in, but I didn't want to use a canned video. I wanted to use my own video. Mm-hmm. So it turns out I actually needed to use a different tool, which is I ended up using. I had to get the whole Adobe Creative Suite for my master's program thing. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm like, oh boy, look at all these toys I have to play with. So there's something called Adobe Premiere Rush, which is basically mm-hmm. you know Premiere Lite, and I figured out how to use that to get my own video. And then brought it into BookBrush where I could add text and text effects and, you know, do the Ken Burns effect and the whole thing like that. And it really, you know, for being a very simple video, it actually is surprisingly impressive looking. I was pleased with it. So,
yeah, I saw the video you did. I thought it was great.
I've done a couple more already. I haven't released them yet, but I've got a long one that I want to release, but I have one more facet to it that I need to add that I need somebody else for, and they're busy right now. So hopefully I'll be able to release that soon. But yeah, once I figured out how to use BookBrush, it's actually pretty neat what you can do with it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think Canva does something similar, but I don't mm-hmm. have Canva. So
yeah, Canva has added a ton of new features. I started using it years ago and it was just like the image editing at first, but now they've got mm-hmm. all sorts of crazy stuff, like you can do reels and videos and cool. I don't even know what else.
Yeah, every once in a while I think I'd kind of like to venture, you know, dip a toe into TikTok, but TikTok scares me. I don't understand it well enough to, you know, I don't want to get in there and do something wrong and not realize it, you know, like violate TikTok etiquette or something. And so I don't know. I'll probably do it at some point because supposedly it's good for marketing, but
that's what they say. But you know, here was my take on TikTok, because you know, it obviously has been very successful for a lot of authors, but mm-hmm. most of these things, like you have the initial kind of rush, you know, where all of a sudden it's working great for a handful of people. And then the more that do it, it kind of eases off. And then eventually just becomes like, it's okay if you, you know, learn and spend the time, and it just becomes part of the whole marketing suite of things we do. Right. And I kind of feel like that's probably where it's headed. So people tell me all the time, like, oh, you got to start doing TikToks for your books and stuff. And I'm like, don't know if I want to do that, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, because, you know, a lot of my readers tend to skew a little older, and TikTok is not generally a platform that a lot of older people hang out on. So I don't even know what kind of, you know, if I get the audience that I want to get, but
yeah.
I don't know. I suppose it couldn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't hurt us to try, right? But I will say this too, is most of the people, which, you know, and I haven't paid maybe as close attention as I should or would like to, but it seems like most of the people I've heard being very successful with it are like romance authors or mm-hmm. Maybe some horror authors, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, horror. Interesting. I hadn't heard that. I've tried looking at TikTok. I don't think I have it trained well enough to show mm-hmm. me the kinds of things I want to see, because, you know, I turn it on and I see some teenager dancing and there's like stuff scrolling all over the place and emojis popping everywhere. And it's like, God, I'm too old for this stuff.
You know, do you know what it did to me? I don't even have it on my phone anymore, but when I first got it, like I just logged into it and it was like, immediately, like, it identified me as a male, and like we literally sat beside JH, and it was like we both had just set up our accounts, and like she's scrolling through and getting all kinds of like fun like pet videos and cats and stuff. Mm-hmm. Mine's like almost naked woman, almost naked woman, almost naked woman, almost. Oh, and I'm like, is this all that TikTok is? Is it just almost naked women? Oh. Is that what all the craze is about?
I didn't get any cats. All I got was like teenagers dancing, and, you know, at least they were clothed, but, you know, it's like,
yeah.
But yeah, it's like this is not my thing here. No. So this is not meant for me, you know?
No.
So, but they tell me you have to train the algorithm to show you what you want by liking the stuff that, that you know, works and ignoring the rest of it. And I don't know.
Yeah, I tried that. I started liking all the like funny dog videos I could find. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, then when I would scroll, it'd be like dog video, almost naked woman, almost naked woman, dog video, almost naked woman.
Almost naked dog.
Almost naked dog. There was this one that I saved on there, which if I still had my account, I guess I'd still be. It was a little, I don't remember what kind of dog it was, but they had this panda costume they put on it. Oh my gosh. It killed me. Like they had a video of it, like with a, like a little fake knife or whatever. It's just this dog running around. Looks like a little panda with a knife. Oh, killed me. It's so funny.
Was that the same platform where we saw the, like the couple who would do all the different videos with the,
oh, I think so.
Ladies
torturing each other.
Oh,
yeah. No, I think
that
so,
was like, there were two
Facebook.
Different ones. Yeah, there were two. Like, one, it was just them, like, playing pranks on each other. The other, it involved that, but then it also had, like, the wife's dad who would appear in some of the videos.
I think that one was Facebook. The other one where the couple was torturing each other, I think that was on TikTok. Both of those were really funny. I can't remember their names, though.
Yeah, I don't either. I just remember, like, anytime the dad would come on, like, he spoke very little English, and his parts were always hilarious.
Yes, so fun.
Maybe I should give it another chance.
Maybe. I don't know. I am not going to. Not right now. I don't have time for that right now.
Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like if you're an author and you want to make a video, like a video trailer for your books, Book Brush might be the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, although you will have to, I think you'll have to use something else to make the actual video and then import it into Book Brush. I don't, but they have a ton of canned stuff, and some of it's pretty cool. So, you know, if you want to go that way, then they do have, and they have canned music too, which is pretty cool. So if you want to do it relatively easily, they give you the tools to do it.
Nice. All right. Well, that'll be our tools segment. All right. And for Creatives on Fire this week, our writing topic is going to be about going wide, and our finances topic is going to be about lifestyle inflation. So to start with the writing side of things, you will hear the term, especially if you are pursuing the indie path, you will hear the term going wide. And sometimes I don't think that that's super obvious to everyone what it means. So I think we'll just explain that real quick. And effectively, a lot of indie authors are Amazon exclusive, and others go to all the platforms, and that's called going wide. Now, you might immediately wonder, why would somebody not go to all the platforms and just go exclusively with Amazon? And, well, we have a cool guest on, so... Rat, would you like to explain that?
Well, I can explain it for me. I don't know. I mean, your mileage may vary, but when I started out, I was wide. I started out in 2015, and I had my books were on Amazon, and they were. I went through Smashwords back in the day to go for the other platforms, you know, Nook and Apple and all those. And most of my money came from Amazon because they're kind of the 800-pound gorilla. And people convinced me. They said, you know, you've got a few books in your series already. And Amazon Kindle Unlimited loves long series and long books because they pay by the page read. And in 2017, I switched over to Kindle Unlimited. I was terrified because I don't like change. You know, I like to set things and kind of forget them, which is not always a good thing in an indie author, but, you know, it is what it is. So I switched all my books, you know, I carefully shut them all down on all the other platforms and made sure they were because, you know, I didn't want Amazon getting mad at me. And switched them all to Kindle Unlimited, and my income went significantly up. I make like 2/3 of my income from Kindle Unlimited. because I have so many mm-hmm. books and people don't want to, you know, a lot of people don't want to buy all those books, but they want to read them. So, you know, they get a Kindle Unlimited subscription and they just kind of wail their way through them, which is, I love it. You know, every once in a while I hear from somebody who said, you know, oh, I just, you know, I read your first book and then I went and read all the rest of them. It's like, I like you. You know, I have friends who are very, you know, big advocates of going mm-hmm. wide, and they've been very successful at it. I think maybe it's, you know, some of it has to do with genre.
Sure.
Because I know some genres do really well in Kindle Unlimited and other ones not so much. I know romance does really well in Kindle Unlimited, but then again, they do really well anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, personally, I would say that, you know, wide didn't really work for me, partially because I don't have, you know, I don't like to market. You know, I'll do it. I have to do it. Everybody has to mm-hmm. do it. But when you're wide, you have to do it more because, you know, Amazon's algorithms will work for you. And if you're in Kindle Unlimited, they'll work even more for you. And, you know, when you're wide, you have to not only advertise yourself on Amazon, but also on all the other platforms too. And I didn't really do that. So, you know, I'm not going to say going, you know, Amazon exclusive is better than going wide. I think it really depends on the person and their work and how much effort they want to put out. There's a lot of variables involved in it.
That was a really good explanation for me just throwing you right in front of that bus and not giving you any heads up that I was going to, I just thought of it as I was saying it. I'm like, the guest is super successful at this. Why don't I just let her explain? But just, you know, for clarity's sake, for anybody who didn't pick up on it. So you might think, well, can't I do all the above? Well, you can't go wide if you're going to be in Kindle Unlimited. So you have to be Amazon exclusive with your ebook in order to do that. And that is the great sort of divide in the indie realm, as Robin alluded to, is, you know, people trying to decide, do I go wide versus do I go Amazon exclusive? I would say, you know, if you're writing a series, you could do worse than to start going with Amazon exclusive and trying KU and seeing if you grow an audience, if things work. That's what I'm doing with my series. You know, I would say that stuff I've done with publishers is wider. And to Robin's point, I have to market that differently and do different things, right? But for my Blade Mage series, that's all exclusively Amazon. And yes, the page reads are pretty amazing.
Yeah, you only have to stay in Kindle Unlimited for, I think it's 90 days. And then you can, after 90 days, you can take it out. Yeah. So some people kind of dip in and out of it. But once again, that's really more effort than I want to expend.
I'm with
trying
you there.
To keep track of all that. Especially with, you know, especially with so many books, it's because you do have to go in and make the effort to, you know, change it in and out, and it takes a while for it to propagate, and it's just, yeah, I'm happy with KU for now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that, and I think, you know, honestly, everyone's just going to have to try things on their own and see what works. And I think you're right about the genre side of it, though I would not be educated enough to try to advise anybody which genres work better where. I think people just have to try different things and see what works for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. Then on the financial side, we are going to talk about lifestyle inflation. And since I'm throwing people under the buses, JH, do you want to explain lifestyle inflation?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I'll do as good a job.
You probably won't. Nobody expects you to be as good as me.
Thanks for that.
Oh, I'm going to get so much hate for that one. Julie Jones will probably hit me for saying that. Like, how dare you?
She should.
If she doesn't, Tracy will. Or Becca. Or yep. Shane. Shane will probably tell me that I need to say I'm sorry for saying that.
Yes.
Do you want me to explain it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So when we talk about lifestyle inflation, what we're referring to is the sort of endless cycle that the average person falls into. I've been guilty of it. Most people I know have been guilty of it. You know, you become an adult. Maybe you go to school, maybe you don't, whatever. You get your first job and you make a certain amount of money and that's what you live to. And you end up at some point feeling like, man, I wish I could make some more money. You get a better job and you promote, you make a little bit more money, but then maybe you go get a nicer car, or maybe you buy nicer clothes, or, you know, maybe you buy a new house or a bigger house or whatever. And every time that you get a promotion or you get a better job or you make more money from whatever, you spend more money. And, you know, if you're pursuing the path of being a full-time author, this might be dangerous, right? It might be dangerous because it might be dangerous for a lot of reasons. Robin's laughing because she knows. It can be dangerous because, you know, you might have, let's say the best thing happens and you have some kind of massive breakout, right? And all of a sudden you make way more money than you ever thought you would in your life on your books. That is fantastic. But if you go and increase the amount of money you spend to live up to that, who's to say you're going to sell that many books again next year, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about reducing expenses, increasing savings, increasing investments, obviously lifestyle inflation will straight kneecap us if we're not careful as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it all plays into each other, and we have to learn to save more than we spend as we get more money.
Yeah. I was going to say it pretty much it goes hand in hand with what we talked about before with the, you know, cutting expenses and, you know, living off of a budget. Because if you're doing that already, then when you do make, you know, have a year where you make way more money, if you're already in that habit of, you know, not overspending, then you won't fall into that trap. And so, say the next year you don't make that much, well, you didn't overspend, so you're still good. You're living off the same budget you always have.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty key in our business. And again, really for the two reasons, right? It could be because you have the big windfall, or it could be just because you want to save and invest more so that you can become financially independent, so that you can spend more time writing. Either direction, lifestyle inflation will kneecap your finances and your future, right? Robin, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think I kind of got over that when I was younger. I mean, when the spouse and I first graduated from college, we kind of went a little crazy because we finally both had real jobs and, you know, could spend money. And so we were not too bright about finances, and eventually we caught up with it. And when I decided to go full time, we talked it over, and I said, you know, this is going to be a change, because I was a tech writer and I made pretty good money as a tech writer. Mm-hmm. But I had saved up like a year's worth of self-publishing income before I decided to go, you know, before I quit my job and went full time. So nowadays we're, you know, we have been very not lifestyle escalation. I mean, we kind of grew out of that as we got older. And I think a lot of people do when they get mm-hmm. older. You know, I used to like, you know, the hottest cool car and everything, but now it's like I don't care anymore. I don't leave the house most of the time. Why do I need the hottest new car when I'm going to drive it? Like, you know, my car is like, I have a BMW, and it, you know, it was pretty cool when it was new, but it's 10 years old now and it has 20,000 miles on it, 'cause I never go anywhere. So.
Well, if you just...
So, yeah.
If you wait like another 20 years... Oh, hey, we got a train. If you wait another 20 years and then sell it, you can sell it as like an antique with low mileage. All right, train ad.
That's true.
Right. Now, I know that was the best train ad we've ever played, because we recorded it in real time right now. in between. That's a lie. I have no idea what train ad you're going to get. I need to get some new ones or some of the ones that Chris had made so that I don't have to keep just replaying JH's Music the Gathering one. I'm pretty sure everyone's sick of it at this point. We were talking about lifestyle inflation. Robin, when you were talking about when you and your husband got out of college and got your first real jobs, I had a similar experience in that the first time I was making enough money that was like, oh, I've got a little extra and I'm not going to starve. My big thing was like, I had this moment where I was like, oh, I am never going to buy cheap beer ever again. And I don't mean like cheap beers and like all domestic beer. I mean, like at the time I was buying like Keystone Light and yeah, exactly. I was like, I can at least drink a Budweiser now or a Miller Lite or something. That was a big one for me. And I was happy with that lifestyle inflation. I had no qualms about it. Where I was less happy with myself was I had there was a point where I was renting a house by myself. And at the same time, I had a car payment. So everything was like super tight and I didn't have any spare money at all. Right. And within a few months, I paid off my car and moved back in with my dad where I had zero, like I didn't have to pay him rent, right? And all of a sudden, I was like, I have so much money. I bought so many things. I spent all the money. I bought a new PlayStation. I bought a new Xbox. I bought a new kayak. I bought a bunch of tools. I spent hundreds of dollars on tools. I don't even use tools. I'm terrible. I break everything I touch. It was so dumb. Like, if I had just started right then saving, if I had known, even at that point, if I had known as much as I know today about saving and investing, I would for sure already be retired.
Yep.
Hey, at least you spent money you actually had. Our kind of baseline for financial stupidity was that we bought a scooter on a credit card. I mean like a Honda scooter, you know, like not electric because they didn't have those back then. But yes, we bought a scooter on a credit card. We were so
That's stupid. Amazing. That's amazing. I'm pretty sure I've got some dumb ones. I just can't think of what they are off the top of my head, but I promise you I've any of my friends who are listening are like, yeah, he's done some dumb stuff with money. So it's all good. But I think that pretty well covers it. We just need to be careful when we get a windfall of money, promotion, whatever, that we don't extend so far beyond our means that we're not able to save and invest it for our future, right?
Yeah. Wow. I really think kind of budgeting and planning what you're going to do with it really helps. Because I think it's easy to just think like, oh, I've got all this money and it feels endless, especially the bigger it is. But if you actually break it down, like, okay, this much is going to this investment and this much is going into savings, and doing that before you start spending, like it makes it easier to not just waste it all, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I think sadly that brings us towards the end. So Robin, also Rat, also R.L. King, and you will find her books as R.L. King. Tell the folks where to find you.
I'm on Amazon under R.L. King. I have got the main series, which is 35 books, and then I have two sub-series, which are set in the same universe, which are smaller if you don't want to dive into 35 books right away. But yep, Amazon is the place to find me. And I have a website at rlkingwriting.com.
All right, cool. And JH?
You can find me at jhfleming.net. I'm on all the social media sites, all the music sites as Wildwood Minstrels, our folk band. Also on Fiverr, Patreon, Ko-fi, all the places.
I was just going to say, I'm on Facebook.
I am also on Facebook. Philip Dreyer Duncan, philipdreyerduncan.com, and all my books also be on Amazon. Do you know what you guys should do is you should go out and buy the first book in my series and also buy the first book in Robin's series and also buy one of Jessica's, JH's books as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a few series also. One's not finished. So do what you want with that.
Yeah, you guys have just spent this whole time listening to our faces. Don't you want to read our faces as well? yeah, and on that note, that I believe is an episode. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you so much.